Welcome to Ideas for the Future of Vermont, a podcast produced by GNAT TV and the Vermont Council on Rural Development.
Hello and welcome back to the final installment of a 10-part series GNAT TV and other community access centers across the Vermont Access Network are hosting in partnership with the Vermont Council on Rural Development and the Barry Montpelier Times Argus and Rutland Herald newspapers. I'm Andrew McKeever, the news director at GNAT TV's news project, and it's a pleasure to have you with us today. This 10-part series is about ideas for the future of Vermont and looks at what are some of the big questions that are facing the state as we emerge out of the pandemic and into whatever lies ahead. What are some of the big issues facing the state in coming years, and how will we go about tackling them? So far, some of the topics we've been discussing on the program have included things like broadband development, welcoming new Vermonters, climate change and its relationship to the state's economy, and localizing food and energy. If you missed one of them or want to get caught up on some of the previous discussions, you can visit the website futureofvermont.org/explore, and you can find not only the previous telecasts, but also the written opinion pieces that have been published in the Herald and the Times Argus, and also podcast versions of our shows in case you'd rather just listen to them. So today, our topic, and the final one in our series, is about civic engagement. Specifically, this 10th proposition reads as follows. Together, Vermonters must renew civic engagement and strengthen trust, civility, democratic decision-making, and empower young Vermonters. With us today to discuss this point are Jenna Kolosky, who is the Community and Policy Manager for the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Ali Jang is the Family Outreach Coordinator and Parent University Manager at the Burlington School District and also a member of the Burlington City Council. We're also pleased to welcome Christopher Kaufman Ilstrup, who is the Executive Director of the Vermont Humanities Council. Folks, thank you all very much for making the time for this today. Welcome to all. And Jenna, I guess we'll look to you to kind of get us started here and perhaps give us a bit of an overview about this proposition and maybe a bit of background.
Thank you, Andrew. And thanks to you both for being here. And let me just first say, Andrew, thank you for leading 10 of these conversations. This is the final one, and this has been a piece of work, and it's really been fun to listen in and be a part of them. So thank you for your leadership there. So this proposition point. So I'll just first start by saying, the Council on Rural Development is a neutral facilitator of public process. We facilitate community conversations and statewide policy conversations as well. And this Vermont Proposition Initiative has been an undertaking of the last almost year and a half now. As you can imagine, talking with rural communities and with leaders, we've been thinking about the future of Vermont for a long time. We facilitated the Council on the Future of Vermont about 12 years ago, and our board really felt that after this incredibly challenging year we've all faced together, it was really time to revisit that conversation and say, if we're to be successful in the next 30 years or 40 years, what are the things that we need to tackle today? And most importantly, what are the things that we can all kind of rally around and get behind and agree upon that we need to come together around in the next 3 years to be successful? So, we have heard from over 3,000 Vermonters in compiling this list of action items, or I like to think of them as kind of leverage points. What are these levers that we can pull that would be transformational for our future? And we've developed one of them, and we'll talk a little bit more about this later, but we'll be launching them this week for a summit to think about next steps towards action. But this final point in the proposition is all about civic engagement, community connection, and leadership. And the reason that this ended up on the list is that you can imagine over the years, time and time again, as we're talking to communities, as we're talking to Vermonters about what they value, this their connection to their community, their connection to their neighbors, the way that Vermonters support each other, the way that we our independence, our self-governance, our local leadership, those are all things that people really value. But we've also heard a lot of concerns about divisions that we face in Vermont, income divisions, the kind of two Vermonts term that you often hear, the impact that social media have had on our ability to connect and come together and agree. And when we see that kind of national tension and distress and how that and distrust and how that's kind of trickling down to Vermont, there are a lot of concerns around that. So this proposition says, if we are going to be a strong state and a state of strong communities in the future, that it's really going to depend on the kind of commitment and collective action of citizens coming together in our communities regionally and at the state level. But it really points to the fact that this can't just be kind of a passive endeavor. It's about saying we need to actively work to foster trust and connection, to bring people together and try to bridge some of these divides. We need to break down barriers to leadership, actively look at what's getting in the way of some of our community members being able to participate and engage and feel a part of our systems. We need to open up leadership opportunities at all levels and also build skills and kind of foster the skills for people to engage, especially our youngest community members. So we face a lot of challenges in the years to come. I think it's really appropriate that this is our final topic, because as you look at all the work that needs to be done in our whole list around childcare, around state and regional governance and planning, around addressing racism in our communities, we look at all that. These are all things that we can't do if we're not united and coming together and building connection. So that's really the fundamentals behind this piece. And I look forward to thinking more about strategy and how we can actually get to work on some of those things.
All right. Well, thank you, Jenna. As I was reading this over, it struck me that there's sort of three parts to it, if you might say. The civic engagement component, the strengthening trust and civility, and then the empowerment of the new leaders emerging in Vermont. And I guess I just thought maybe a good way for us to kind of get going today might be to take each of those segments and talk about each one of them in terms of what are we doing well and what areas might need improvement. We'll start with the civic engagement one. And Christopher, perhaps you could get us going here. As you think about civic engagement in Vermont at the moment, what strikes you as being something that's going pretty well? I mean, this is obviously a national question, maybe an international one as well. A lot of conversation around this over the past few years. But what are we doing well here in the state, and what are some areas that we could do better?
Sure, Andrew. Thank you so much for inviting us here. Vermont Humanities has been involved in civic engagement and democracy efforts for a long time in the state. And we know from doing research that Vermonters have high levels of trust, that social capital is high here, that we have lots of opportunities to get involved. But we also know that those opportunities are of staggered access or staggered inclusion, perhaps we might say, for different kinds of populations. We know that it's harder for newer Vermonters to get involved, that we tend to have a relatively closed loop in our social capital, for example, that makes it a little bit more difficult for people to feel invited in, to feel like they actually have a space at that table. We know that we have tended towards a relatively homogenous society where white folks who have been here a long time are typically accorded a higher status in our civic discourse, right? We always talk about how you have to be a native Vermonter in order to really be involved. And by native Vermonter, we often mean not an indigenous Vermonter, but a white Vermonter whose family has lived here and farmed the land for six or eight generations. And so there's a real need, I think, to move away from that notion that to qualify as a Vermonter, you have to have a certain background. You have to have lived here for a certain number of years, and to really stop with that kind of stigmatizing idea of who counts and who doesn't. And move towards being truly an inclusive society where anybody can be involved. I follow with interest a lot of the political engagement of communities of color in Vermont, and I know how hard it is for individual folks to get involved in the process and stay involved because it's often so unwelcoming. I know that my friend Rachel, who works with me here at Vermont Humanities, was a member of the Hartford Select Board for about 7 months, but had to leave the Select Board this week and didn't feel like she could continue in that work. And those are the kinds of things that I think we really need to work on changing.
And Ali, what's your take on that, on the civic engagement component of this?
Thank you for having us, and for Gina and team for organizing such a great, wonderful process to bring this summit to fruition. And I'm glad to be here, and I'll be very delighted to talk about civic engagement. And as you can see, you can hear from my accent, I am not originally from here, came here 14 years ago. And now a city councilor representing one of the most conservative ward in the city of Burlington. You know, and as part of my work also as someone who is, created the Parent University Program, which is an educational program for parents of students in the Burlington School District. And it's all geared toward engaging families, and especially the most vulnerable ones, to be involved in their children's education. And civic engagement in the state of Vermont, I think we have seen a couple of great, wonderful practices. You know, one of them is specific to the state with the creation of the Racial Equity, Inclusion, and Belonging office, and also making now voting accessible to everyone. So there are opportunities here that we need to harness. But I do believe that in the municipality levels, we need to put more emphasis in terms of engaging people by giving them access to education, by giving them access to information. You know, I think the state is leading around the language access plan. The city of Burlington also has done substantial amount of work to see that through, but it's not sufficient to that. To me, we have to make sure that, the leadership position in the state reflect the diversity that exists in this great state, right? We also want to make sure that, people from all backgrounds, also from all ages, are also included in decision-making processes by allowing opportunities for people to serve on boards and commissions, right? And to do that and to get there, we need focus. We also need intentional, focus in order to see fruition around it. And I think as a state, we can lead the nation because of our, we are a very small state. And I think we can try so many great ideas, and in order for Vermont to be the leading spare in bringing everyone included in the processes. Yes.
All right. Well, let's move on to the second part of it then, the strengthening trust and civility, which again, is an echo of a national question that's been a controversial subject for a while. Strengthening trust and civility. How do we go about doing that, do you think, Christopher? What's the first step here that needs to happen to kind of give that a boost?
Well, I would hope that we're doing a little bit better than the national averages might say around trust and civility here in Vermont. But I do think that there's still a lot of work to do, and especially coming out of the pandemic, reducing isolation, getting people off of their phones, off of Facebook, off of Twitter, interacting with each other is going to be really deeply important. One of the things that we do here at Vermont Humanities is we support community engagement projects across the state. I think we need to do a lot more of that work. And it can be done through multiple modalities, right? It doesn't have to be just about getting more people onto boards and commissions. It can be engaging people in community and public art projects, for example, or community reads programs, which is something that we do here. It can be encouraging more young people to be involved in decision-making processes that affect their lives, whether it's through the school board or through youth advisory committees in their towns. There's lots of different opportunities to be building trust, but we have to create that open space, right, where people of differing opinions can come together, really share those opinions and not feel like they're about to be attacked. We need to build that skill set around courageous conversations and brave conversations. I know that Catamount Arts up in the Northeast Kingdom recently ran a four-part series on holding courageous conversations, and they had hundreds of people participate. We need a lot more of that, really acknowledging that it's hard in the world of Fox News to hold courageous conversations, but we can lead the way.
I think, you know, around the nation, what is happening elsewhere is a little bit different about what's happening here in the state of Vermont. I mean, I do believe that something that we need to celebrate is elected officials in the state are very accessible to the population. But while we're doing very well in that area, there is this social media can be also beneficial and also can be crucial in terms of sharing critical information. But I think most of the time we have to pay a particular attention to how do we use social media very well. Is it participating in the betterness of that of our state or not? I think civility and trust, we have to do it by making sure that we all step up. When we see things, people being attacked on social media, we have to step up and just say it is over. The more that elected leaders can remind the constituency that while we disagree, we should also stay civil. We can strengthen trust and lead by example for the future of this state. And this is a responsibility of all Vermonters, you know, to not bring negativity into our discourse, but rather to make sure that all voices are being heard and respected. This is a meaningful participation in our democracy, right? So that's what I definitely think.
This question around civility and civic discourse has been one that's been intriguing to me for a while. I've been thinking a lot about it over the past couple of years. I find it interesting that it's very hard to get groups of people who have opposing views on whatever the subject is, to be able to sit down and kind of talk to each other in a way that respects the other side's point of view, but also attempts to see it, you know, see it from their point of view and then persuade in a civil way that, well, have you ever thought about it like this? That doesn't seem to be something that's very easy to have happen. I don't know, Christopher, at the Humanities Council, I imagine this must be something you folks are involved with a lot, with having watched several of your programs this way.
We think about this all the time, and we get feedback from people all the time, right? As we produce our first Wednesday's lectures in Manchester and around the state, we're always trying to pick topics that are provocative, that where communities can really dig into a particular issue and really think about it. Hopefully it'd come out of it with a new perspective or a different perspective. Vermont Reads is the same, right? This week we have Angie Thomas coming to Vermont virtually. She's the author of our Vermont Reads book, The Hate U Give, which is a fictionalized account of the Black Lives Matter movement. And we've certainly received a number of I would say Fox News inspired emails about why we would bring Angie Thomas to Vermont and how people feel about the Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, it's our hope that folks are going to come into a conversation like that and they're really going to learn to think outside of what they may have heard in national news media and come to their own conclusions about how Black Lives Matter, both nationally and here in this state. And we hope that Angie's conversation will help people to really learn and think differently.
Andrew, do you mind if I chime in on this question? Because you can imagine it's something VCRD is thinking about quite a lot, as well as we kind of facilitate community level conversation. Because it's kind of like there's two different things happening at once. Like so valuable that we have folks like Christopher and hopefully us in some ways, but many other organizations that are having these, like Catamount Arts, having these courageous conversations, really digging into these really challenging topics and trying to get people to kind of to come together around these challenging topics. But also at the same time, there's that kind of like local level decision making that's taking place, and that's a lot of the conversations that we facilitate, is kind of coming into a community and folks coming into a room. And I'll never forget like facilitating a community conversation up in a town in the Northeast Kingdom during the 2016 election, where like you're sitting in the room and thinking, people in this room, I'm sure, have extremely different political views and extremely different ideas on who should be winning this election. And it could have been a really divisive environment. But in fact, when people were focused on their own community, you didn't see any of that because people were narrowed in on like, what do we care about? What do we value here? And people came around. It's like when you have that collective wisdom in the room of people thinking about the future of their own town, it's pretty incredible. It's inspiring to me every time how people are able to come together. And so I really think, and having said that, I also know that not everyone feels comfortable in those spaces and in those rooms. And so it's kind of also looking at like, how are we, even at the smallest, like municipal and local levels, creating space for that kind of local dialogue. You know, we facilitate a process that does some of that. Other organizations facilitate that, but communities also need the tools to do it on their own, that, you know, that our local select boards could use some support, probably thinking about how to run a meeting where people are feeling like they can contribute meaningfully. And even if they don't agree, it can be managed in a way that's civil and that their voice has been heard. And so we're thinking a lot about like how to make sure that local leaders at that level have the tools they need to support those spaces, and also are looking at how to open up representation in their leadership as well. And some communities are doing it right now and working on these kinds of things and realizing, you know, we're working, the city of Winooski is working through the Working Communities Challenge to really look at like, how do we adjust our city policies and practices so that the folks that we represent in our city are actually represented in their government? And it's hard work, and it's work that, and it's critical, and it's interesting to see the municipality really focusing in on that, and other smaller towns are as well.
Yeah. To add into what both Christopher and Gina just talked about in terms of the importance of municipalities to step up in trying to solve this issue about engagement, and I think representation as well. If you think about it, the state of Vermont has a demographic growth composed of new Americans. So it's based on a recent report from CVOU, it's like over 80% of the population growth is composed of new Americans. You know, it's important also for new Americans to come here and settle here. But giving them access to food, nutrition, housing, is it enough? I think it's a big question that we all need to start to think about, you know. But I think the next step that we need to do, just like Winooski, is to make sure that we have those populations represented in our boards and commissions. You know, the table, it's not about inviting people at the table, but the table itself needs to be reconstructed with the newcomers in order we have strong representation. Go to our schools, you see diversity in terms of the population, in terms of the students, but no diversity when you look about it in terms of the teachers. They are not diverse. White teachers teaching people from all over the world, right? I think we need more meaningful focus and investment in making sure that the representation, the leadership position represent the state diversity right now. Another component is how do we make sure that at every board level, you know, the state level, that we have representation from new Americans as well. You know, and I think all the communities, while their municipalities are not doing very well, they are getting together reason why a new organization has been created that's called the Vermont New American Advisory Council. You know, it's the leaders of New American communities coming together in making sure we want to see increase in community engagement around what making our state better. I think we need to all sit down and not use New Americans anymore as an afterthought, but we include them from the start, just like this summit, from the conception to where we are. I think our perspective has been part of this table, and this needs to be celebrated.
I would also add, Andrew, that we need to really think about our language, right? That Jenna and I were both part of a group that met over the winter and spring called the Vermont Civics Collaborative. And right up front, we had a really interesting educational moment that the language that we use as white folks in Vermont does not always resonate or have meaning with either new Americans or just Vermonters of color generally. That when we talk about respect for our Constitution, we don't always recognize that the Constitution means different things to different groups of people. And that for some groups of people, the Constitution has been used as a means to exclude them from being engaged in their community rather than to bring them in. And I think we have to have those difficult conversations about the language that we use, how we reconstruct that table that Ali's talking about. Does the table even stay in the same room? Or does the table need to be in somebody else's neighborhood to include new Americans and others who have been traditionally excluded?
And I think that's one, actually, I was reflecting on some of the things we've learned about community engagement in the last year, having to do it virtually. And I actually think, like, in terms of our community processes, I think we've actually had learned some really important lessons that will carry over even when we're in person, because actually engaging virtually allowed us to connect in a deeper way with different. Oftentimes in the past, you hold one big community meeting and you do everything you can to get people there. You can offer transportation, you can offer childcare, you can look at different times of the day. Like, there's all kinds of things that we should be doing to adjust for, you know, bringing people together. But the reality is, and I shouldn't stereotype, but often on the kind of like different ends of the political spectrum, both ends of maybe the political spectrum, there are people who do not feel that they're part of the process. And then certainly people who have been entirely left out of the conversation. And so we've kind of learned some lessons. We've had the opportunity, because we're not driving 2 hours both ways, to hold some like smaller group, like focus group conversations, that where somebody may not come to a meeting, but if you have a group of, you know, business owners in the community or a group of lower income, you know, community members, or a group of community members of color, or whatever the grouping might be, that we've been able to engage people actually in a much deeper way. And I think that will continue on, because I love, Christopher, that way you described that maybe the table needs to move, right? Like, we need to go to meet people where they are in these conversations. And I think we've all learned a lot of lessons over the last year around ways that we can be a little more creative in the way we're doing it.
And it's quite possible that some of us need to actually step away from the table, right? And make space.
Yeah.
Especially for people who've never felt welcome at that table before. You know, I've spent a lot of time both over this last year, but also in previous parts of my life working with LGBT youth, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth, and getting young people to feel safe enough to speak up in an environment that is dominated by straight white people is really, really, really hard. But there are ways to make sure that LGBTQ youth are heard and supported. And we need to support those ways. And if some of that means stepping back and taking ourselves out of the conversation, then that's what we need to do.
You know, here in Vermont, I think it was you, Ali, who said we're a small state. One of the things that we like to pride ourselves on is that you can pick up the phone and call your state representative or a state senator or somebody and actually get an answer. Somebody will pick up the phone on the other end. Do you think between the structure that we have in place now, between the annual March Town meeting, when we get back to having it in March, a couple of our communities down here are having them now, between you know, well, local select board and school board meetings that are public, open to the residents, between relatively good access to a state legislature. Is there something we're missing here that, you know, the communication is not happening as well as it could, given that relatively easy dynamic that we have to work with? I mean, do you feel that people who feel marginalized aren't feeling comfortable, let's say, writing letters to the editor of the local paper or posting something on social media that might be a little on the controversial side, and because they're afraid there'll be sort of a hostile reaction, or they feel like even despite the fact that we have things like a Marchtown meeting and relatively good access to lawmakers, it's still too challenging to kind of get their opinion out there in a way that they feel like they're being heard.
Absolutely. Yes. And I give you one concrete example is during the governor's, you know, debrief around the response to coronavirus. No, I think we see one concrete example of what civic engagement or participation should look like, access to information. You see someone who speaks sign language, right? And he's doing it beautifully, right? But how about other people who speak different languages other than English? Are they having the same access of the information the governor is providing, right? I think we could have done better in that area. Instead of waiting for those messages to be translated, it could have been simultaneous, you know, at the same time. As the governor speaks and, you know, people from Mai Mai or Nepali community have access to that information on the spot, right? While we also should celebrate that on town meeting day, people show up. And now I think Vermont has provided a second level of participation, which is this mailing ballots. It goes to all homes now. People have now the option to go to vote or to just vote via mail. It should be also celebrated, right? We also, like you said, have great access to our legislators, to our elected officials. But the issue here comes down from my perspective around language access. The state of Vermont need to do a much better job, just like the small municipalities such as Burlington is trying to do. Language access is key in making sure that people love this state and also want to stay in the state. When I go to national conferences to present about family and community engagement, I always try to sell Vermont that here we are beautiful. Our environment is beautiful. We care deeply about community. We care deeply about nature, right? But at the same time, people will have questions about how do you make sure that people that you serve have access to life-saving information. And I think, you know, since 2017, I see that the city of Burlington is doing a little bit better. But now I don't know about rural Vermont. And when I say rural Vermont, I'm talking about people who are rich. And it is shared that many people who live in rural Vermont are poor. I don't know if they definitely have access to those information. But I think whatever we do, we should make sure as a priority that everyone have access to the information coming from their local government or their state government. It will be key as we move forward.
Can I add to that I think I agree with everything you said, and I think we need to be strongly, strongly encouraging reputable journalism in the state of Vermont, right? Like what Andrew is doing at GNET, what Digger is doing, and the Rutland Herald, Times Argus, and many of the local community papers like the Hinesburg Record and the South Burlington Other Paper. It is so important that we support those journalistic entities to provide that good and accurate information so that people don't have to rely on the disinformation that comes out from a lot of the national news sources. That, you know, anything that we can do, and we do journalism projects here at Vermont Humanities all the time, anything we can do to support young journalism students and the local papers is going to help. We can't lose that coverage of local issues. We can't.
I think all of that you both were just saying is so important. I just want to also add too, like, because I think, Andrew, what you described is all those are all things that are so great about Vermont, that we have that kind of access, that we have town meeting to start with. Those are all wonderful things, but sometimes just availability isn't quite enough for people to really feel engaged and connected, if that makes sense. Like, you know, if I'm a young person that's new to a small rural town and like, yes, the select board's streaming their meetings, like, is that really going to feel like enough to make me feel like I want to jump in and get engaged and connect? Like, probably not. And unfortunately, and I because people always come to us asking like, what's the key to inviting people and getting people to turn out? And what's the silver bullet to engagement? And the challenge is there isn't one. And it's all about time and capacity and putting in the work. Oftentimes the most effective way to get somebody engaged is to call them up and say, I really value, you know, the knowledge that you bring to this community, and I'd love for you to join this board or be on, you know, help us think about this issue or whatever. And so it does, fortunate in the sense that it builds connection, but unfortunately it takes time and energy to do that kind of meaningful engagement that just takes it a step beyond like, well, we're streaming our meetings. Like, I just think only so many people are going to attend a live stream select board meeting.
Indeed. Let me just pivot here for a moment. All the things that you've all been talking about are really fascinating, and I want to leave some time for us to discuss them further. But I just wanted to kind of get in some time here to talk about this last part about empowering young Vermonters and new leaders. And Jenna, as a young Vermonter and a new leader, I'm going to throw this one to you first. What do you think we should be doing to make that process go faster? I mean, do younger folks feel like, I'm not ready for this, or I'm not interested, or whatever, or they don't want me anyway? Or is it simply a case like, well, typically when you're growing up, you're building a career, you're starting a family, you got a lot of things going on. Maybe being on your town select board isn't the top priority. It is for some, obviously, but as a whole, a lot of other things going on. So I'm going to turn it over to you and just let you tell me what you think we need to do to empower younger Vermonters more effectively.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to share some reflections. I will say, I don't know, I don't consider myself youth anymore, which is honestly where I think it starts. Yeah, so let me start with the kind of younger families and Vermonters. Every community that we talk to right now and in the last, you know, 5-10 years, that's front and center, right? How do we attract and retain young people to our community? How do we keep them here? How do we get them excited about our town? And the challenge with that is, like, again, there's no silver bullet, right? Like, families, people, young people are attracted to communities for all kinds of different reasons. And oftentimes it's many reasons, right? And it's kind of a question about community vibrancy generally. But all of the things we're talking about, I think, are things that will attract and retain youth to our communities, building more community connection and engagement. And that doesn't always mean joining a select board, right? It might mean like having a family group that, you know, that families with young kids can get together at the playground and meet each other, or having a concert series that different groups in town are hosting music on Thursday nights that families can attend. Like, creating communities where people feel welcome, people feel connected, people feel that they have an opportunity to meet other people that, you know, in their same life situation. I think all of that, you know, boosting walkability in our communities, boosting our local economies, all of that create environments where people want to be. And so I think that there's a whole piece of work there. But then in terms of the youth, I think Ali can probably speak much more to this. But a lot of this proposition in particular speaks to like that this should start when kids are young. I don't know the exact numbers, but I've heard in a lot of, they do the youth like behavior risk survey, and they ask a question of like, do you feel your community values you? Basically, and many youth around the state and many communities say no, that they don't feel that they're a part of their own community. And I think that a lot of this work needs to start there. Like, what can communities be doing to meaningfully connect to young people? You know, some towns around the state have built like school community partnerships where youth in the school actually serve on boards in the community and are actively and meaningfully engaged, not just sitting at the table, but have an active role to play, and where community members are involved in the school and have a role to play there in bringing community issues into the school. And so I think that there's a lot that can be done to start much earlier in the, you know, in civics education in our schools. But I'd love to hear Ali's take then in terms of the youth piece.
Yes, thank you. And I think it's all about the future. You know, we are sitting here talking about Vermont from today until, you know, the next 20 years, how it's going to look like. But I think we should not move away from the importance of youth engagement in our processes. And we should also harness what we already established, which is our community schools, our schools, great, wonderful schools. Now, what power will it have to take one example, such as budgets in your municipality? It would be powerful to bring the budget itself to high school students, what we call the concept of participatory budgeting. And you know, you put the problem for them to solve. Their perspective may be completely different of what their parents, you know, think about a certain issue. What they prioritize could be completely different from what the state or city leaders would want to prioritize. I think we need to have the mind that what we're trying to create here is for a better future of our great state and for a better citizens, you know, of the futures. We have to include them in the beginning. And including them can also take different ways, right? One example could be for each high school student to graduate, you must at least provide 10 to 20 hours of community service to your local government. And you are sitting on the boards or the commission as part of your graduation requirements, you know? And also the state agency of education could also provide credits for those youth to access, or scholarship when they graduate to access, because they have provided time. And it's a win-win situation. One, you are helping these youth to develop skills of the future, of debating, of finding consensus, right? And two, you are also meaningfully participating in helping them access higher education. I think it would be a win-win situation. Boards and commissions are one example. And also, you know, we have a biggest number of nonprofit organizations per capita compared to the rest of the nation, right? Those also in their boards, they should at least have youth representation there. Tonight, the 24th, the Burlington City Council will be discussing a resolution seeking to increase youth civic engagement in our boards and commission. And it's tonight. There was the pilot in 2015. We received a report about how it's going. And now we see that there is a need to increase more kids into this discussion. I think it's always a win-win situation to meaningfully, like Gina said, include youth since the beginning of making this state as great as it can be.
Yeah. I would add to that, Andrew, that we really have to ask the question, new to who, right? That when we're talking about new leadership, it's often sort of framed in welcoming new people into structures that are run by folks who have been around for a very long time. And, you know, one example, that the concrete example from just this past year that I can think of is the great fanfare and publicity that surrounded the awesome election of Representative Taylor Small to the House of Representatives in Montpelier from Winooski as the first out transgender representative in the state of Vermont, as though Taylor had sort of sprung fully forth from the head of Athena and was brand new to the entire state of Vermont. Well, Taylor had been organizing in her community and in Burlington through the Pride Center and through Drag Queen Story Hour for years and years before that. So she was not a new leader. She was new to all of the old leaders in Montpelier. But she was a very powerful leader in her neighborhood and in her community for years before that. And it's a great example of needing to make that space. You know, I live here in Montpelier in central Vermont, and our leadership in the State House, no knock to them, they're great people, have been reelected over and over and over again for decades. And that creates no space for anybody else to demonstrate their leadership skills in Montpelier when people continue to sit in those seats and get reelected term after term after term after term and refuse to make space. And I think that's problematic in Vermont, to be totally honest. We have to recognize that leaders come in all shapes and sizes and forms, that they're organizing in their communities like Taylor every day, and that if we truly want to make change in Vermont, we need to make that space for them to take the next step and move on to the next position and grow their leadership skills even more.
What do you all think the role of social media has been in all of this? I've been thinking about this, again, a lot for a while now. It's a very mixed bag, it seems to me. But do you think, in general, does social media kind of help move this process along for civic engagement and building trust, et cetera, or is it becoming more of a negative force?
I think it just depends on, you know, who you ask. And I think most of the time when youth use why they use social media is completely different from maybe my generation or your generation, because their generation is more for like entertainment. You know, but how do we harness where they go for source of information or entertainment, and how do we embed, you know, their input or seeking their input in those processes? I think the social media also has its, you know, negative component as well. You know, because the rise of, you know, lack of civility, for a lack of a better word, you know, but I think most of the time, people like me, we are being attacked all the time on social media. And most of the time, all I do is to not just engage. I think that's a key. I welcome, you know, a sit-down discussion other than just sending, you know, responses on social media. It's not constructive. What we need is people to be civil, to be also positive, in also providing their ideas and to debate issues other than just attacking each other on social media. But asking youth definitely about, you know, doing a survey, how would you want to have access to information, and how can we engage you on social media? I think you might get responses that you never thought of. And most of the time, trying to solve an issue, it would be beneficial to bring those who are directly affected into that discussion, and a survey could be something for the agriculture, your organization, Gina, to maybe explore.
Yeah. Just have a couple of minutes left. Does anyone else want to chime in on that question, or should I move on to one last point here?
I might just really quickly chime in to say that I think at the local level, there's some real opportunity in Vermont. We've been a model for hyper-local social media with Front Porch Forum, right? Like the ability for our communities to connect so directly. On the other hand, I've also seen local community forums that are not quite as Front Porch Forum is cultivated, right? They do foster a positive environment there. They have certain rules that must be followed that are not followed, right, on broader social media networks. And I've seen some pretty toxic local boards and networks as well. But I think for the most part, at the local level, as Ali's describing, if those tools are being used as a tool to be more open, to reach a broader audience, to bring more people into the conversation, I think there are some real opportunities there, like we've seen with Front Porch Forum and what that's done to help our communities connect and help, you know, foster local commerce as well. But again, we need to be really careful with the direction that some of those forums can take, where people go on the attack as opposed to have civil conversations.
I will say that when a lot of the state newspapers turned off their comment section, it became a much different conversation, right? To not have to wade through so much hatefulness in the Digger comments and the 7 days and so on.
Yeah.
Hmm. So, yeah, like I said, we just had a couple minutes left, and I just wanted to kind of ask, well, I'm going to start with you, Ali, on this one. What special challenges do you think? I think you've already talked to this point a little bit, but I wanted to give you a chance to speak maybe a little bit further on it, as well as the rest of you. What special challenges confront new Vermonters and BIPOC Vermonters in this area? I mean, is it just a case where there's a certain feeling of, well, I mean, we're just not part of the mix here, and we're not being invited to the party? Do you think that's what's going on, or is it just a case of, you know, a certain amount of time needs to go by before people feel comfortable of engaging more civic than they may have been?
Yes, yes. I mean, I think
drop it a little bit, and so that's why I wanted to kind of bring that in.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think, you know, one, it all comes back to your state, the state of your economy, of the income that you make. You know, do I definitely have time to be engaged? You know, I think, you know, it also will be very valuable in order for people to receive the information that are necessary on their own language. And we have to invest into this, making sure that the language access plan is developed for all municipalities, also have professionals, community trusted voices that can do the outreach in engaging people about what they think about all the issues, right? And also, you know, we also need to support organizations such as the Vermont New American Advisory Council, working to seek civic engagement among the new Americans. I think, you know, financial support to those organizations is also key. But the biggest problem that I have encountered, reason why I created Parent University, are we have so many gaps. And the biggest gap is to have access to information. And the state is also bringing so many new Americans here. I think it would be valuable to also support their learning, give them opportunities to learn and understand what the state is about, and also give them opportunities for them to explore in becoming economically sufficient. You know, I think, you know, that both there is a problem, and these are the solution, and also the way to solve it is inverse and also to focus. Yeah.
And Christopher, would you like to speak to that just for a moment or two?
I think the point that Ali makes about language is one that goes beyond new Americans, right? That the way that we talk in Vermont boards and commissions is a special language. The way that we talk in government is a language that is not necessarily accessible to many people in the state of Vermont. And it, whether you're coming as an immigrant or whether you're just coming with a different cultural sensibility, like the queer youth that I was talking about earlier, they need support. We need to support all of the different cultures in Vermont in hearing about how to get involved from our own cultural perspective, from our own cultural viewpoint. And that changes from community to community. And I think we have to learn to be more fluent with each other in cross-cultural communication. Whether that's dairy farmers talking to queer youth or new Americans talking to conservative Republicans that are anti-immigration. Mm-hmm. We need to become more fluent in talking cross-culturally.
Mm-hmm. And I just can't stress enough. I love that Ali mentioned those community organizations. Like, as a community convener, we know that I don't have all the answers and how to engage all the different in all those different languages, right, that you're trying to speak to bring people into the fold. And I rely heavily on organizations that already have the trust and connection in their own communities, that are willing to be involved, or in some cases investing in supporting them in doing this work that to help you reach out to people in their community. And that's just become so critical to us in our work. And that's not that means, you know, new American communities, but it also means, you know, when you're working in a rural community and trying to reach those dairy farmers and more conservative folks that that aren't going to show up to a meeting about the future of their town, but they have incredible wisdom on the on what this, you know, on what their community could be and the value that they see for the future. And so connecting to those folks can really that have the trust in the community and can be a bridge for you has been incredible. And Vermont Center for Independent Living and looking at the accessibility of our meetings and how people can participate if they aren't able to participate the way that we've already, you know, laid it out. And so incredibly valued to support organizations that do that work.
Well, boy, it's been a fascinating conversation here, and we could probably easily go for another hour or so, but unfortunately, the clock is ticking, and we'll have to leave it there for today, because I just wanted to leave a few minutes before we go to have Jenna tell us a little bit about the summit meeting that the Vermont Council on Rural Development has been working very hard on. That's going to be coming up on May 26th and 27th. So, Jenna, back over to you. Tell us a little bit about the summit and what's going to be going on.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. So May 26th and 27th, the idea of this, so it's a summit on the future of Vermont. The idea of the summit is really kind of a turning point in this Vermont proposition work. So we've heard from all these thousands of Vermonters over the last year. We've done some redrafting of the proposition, which will launch at the summit. And then the summit will serve as an opportunity to first really dig into each of the proposition points. So conversations much like this, where we take each of the propositions and have experts and leaders share their perspective, but then also hear from kind of like folks on the ground. We have a, you know, a panel of farmers and foresters sharing their thoughts on the future. We have a panel of new Americans sharing what they see is important for the future. So first experts and leaders digging into each, then different perspectives from Vermonters all around the state. And then the second day is all about gathering input. So attendees, and we've got nearly 550 registered now. So Vermonters from all walks of life coming together to say, well, if we're going to work on this area of the proposition, here's what I think needs to be done in the coming years. And so gathering that input, which will then feed into a team of future Vermont action team, a team of creative and innovative thinkers that will help us put these pieces into action. So May 26th and 27th, futureofvermont.org is where you can find that information. And we hope that everyone will join us.
And the registration is still open for that. I just have to go
back. It's open. Yep. Yeah, open right up until the 26th.
For there. All right. Well, I'll be listening in. Well, again, boy, I wish we had another hour to keep this conversation going, but we're going to have to leave it there for now. But just wanted to thank Jenna Kolosky of the Vermont Council on Rural Development, Ellie Jiang, the Family Outreach Coordinator and Parent University Manager at the Burlington School District, and Christopher Kaufman Elstrup, the Executive Director of the Vermont Humanities Council, for being with us today to share their thinking on this proposition. Certainly an interesting and important one for our state, and one we'll be hearing more about in the future, I'm sure. So that will do it for the 10 programs that we've been hosting so far on the 10 propositions. Hope you've all found this program, as well as the 9 that came before it, interesting and thought-provoking. And again, if time permits, you should get registered for that summit meeting coming up later this week. Okay, thank you again all for being with us today to discuss. Thank all of you viewers for listening in. And well, in the past I've said we'll see you again the next time, but I guess I can't do that this time around. But anyway, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And again.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Andrew.
All right. See you at the summit.
You have been listening to Ideas for the Future of Vermont, a podcast produced by GNAT TV and the Vermont Council on Rural Development. Thank you for listening local.